Take me out to Coney Island. Take me to the fair.
Paola Pristini is probably best known in the New York cultural community as the creative and executive director of National Sawdust, the artist-led new music incubator and performance space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. But she's also a well-respected composer in her own right, with musical pieces commissioned by Carnegie Hall, the New York Philharmonic, and Trinity Wall Street, among others. The Hubble Cantata, a recent work that premiered at Celebrate Brooklyn last summer, merged opera, virtual reality, and space exploration. And her latest is an epic new opera theater work called Aging Magician that tells the story of Harold, a world-weary clockmaker nearing the end of his unusual life as he is transported dreamlike to his memories of Coney Island. It opens at the New Victory Theater on March 3rd, and I'm very pleased that it brings Paola Pristini to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
And one of the early reviews described this as a hypnotizing, aesthetically stimulating production. I'm sure that you're rather pleased by the response so far.
It's been a wonderful ride, about a year of bringing the piece around the country, and it's always a huge, you know, pleasure to bring it back to my hometown.
Has it changed much?
Definitely. Each iteration is, you know, a refining process. And so finally, for the New Victory, it's had time to settle in, and it's in a great, great place.
And I'm always curious about how the New Victory is described. It's called Off-Broadway, even though it's on Times Square. You
yes.
couldn't get more Broadway.
You couldn't. And, you know, the irony is, in Harold's mind, he's this, you know, aging magician. And so we love to say that Harold's finally going to Broadway.
Is this an original story?
Yes, it is. It is by Rindy Eckert.
So you said that you were already working on this before the two of you collaborated.
Well, you know, the seed of the idea began about 4 to 5 years ago when I had really wanted to create a work that was based on the classic Charon tale of crossing the River Styx. And I had always been in love with Rindy Eckert and his extraordinary work. And so I created a short piece that was, you know, based on the Charon tale and slowly roped him in into the idea of creating an original work based on that, and then brought together Mark Stewart and my other collaborator, Julian Crouch, and the four of us created this original tale.
You were already thinking of them while you were in the process of creating it.
Definitely. I tend to work on long process collaborative works, and so muses are very much a part of my process.
And you have you say in a creative note in the program that each co-creator has been contemplating Harold's situation from different angles, with a great deal of pushing and pulling, losing our way, finding it again, disappointment, delight, curiosity, and cunning.
Yes, well, you know, this work took about 4 years to find its way. And, you know, when you are creating large multimedia work and you're, in this case, you know, co-producing it with my own company and Beth Morrison Projects, sometimes it takes quite a bit of time to lift things off the ground. And with this work specifically, the writing process was complicated and Rindy needed to keep finding his way. And eventually that complicated writing process actually became part of the storyline of Harold's own trajectory.
And did you know that Rindy would be playing Harold?
Oh, yes.
From the start?
Absolutely. He was who inspired me to embark on this.
Harold, the elderly clockmaker, is searching for a protege to pass along his secrets to. So this is really about memory as it is about anything else.
It's about memory, and it's also about legacy and understanding death from different perspectives. In this case, it's a children's choir who helps shepherd him to his final destination, which in his mind is this imagined afterlife that's Coney Island. And if you take the classic Charon tale of crossing the River Styx, in this case, we're crossing the East River and using the F train to get there. And so all the magical stops from Neptune to Church Avenue to Aquarium illuminate different memories of his life that are brought to life by the children's choir.
So we transport this elderly man in an emergency room to becoming a young boy on his father's shoulders in Coney Island.
Exactly. And to other memories as well. And in that sense, what's really been beautiful about this work and the fact that it took 4 to 5 years is that we saw children grow up. You know, when I first wrote the work, I imagined that the children's choir would be 12 to 13, which is the age they were when we started. But because the work didn't actually take flight until last year, now they're 17, 18, but they've been part of the process of creating the work and of looking at all these different aspects of life and death.
And they are not the only components of this. You also have a string quartet. You have puppetry.
Yes.
Well, was the idea from the start to create a total theater experience?
An immersive one, indeed, yes. You know, the thing is that Mark Stewart, who's the fourth collaborator, created this beautiful giant set that gets revealed at the very end, which is a magical Coney Island made of musical instruments that the kids inhabit and then make come to life. And Julian Crouch is an extraordinary director and designer and puppeteer. And so at some points, the kids just use everyday objects to, you know, project upon, or they make a puppet made out of the same paper that, you know, they throw at Harold during a memory. And so in a way, this is an ode to everyday life and to everyday magic. And it's made out of things that could be in everyday life. Paper, bike spokes.
And the Brooklyn Youth Chorus functions as a kind of a Greek chorus.
Indeed. They shepherd him. Yes, they shepherd him through through these last memories.
Had you written for a choir before?
I had written for the Brooklyn Youth Chorus before and found them very, very inspiring. And so they're a very unique group that can do many, many different things. So definitely they were in mind.
You didn't decide that kids had aged out and you just bring in some young blood as you went along?
No. This is the beauty of creating your own production, is that you're writing for specific people.
And in the end, well, we have this production that now I'm assuming you think is the final version.
I think, you know, for now, this is the final version.
Well, you finally brought it to New York, where we understand the concept of Coney Island a lot better than some of the places you probably took it to.
You know, it's true. It started at the Walker Arts Center, which was one of the commissioners. And I have to say, though, you know, first of all, kids, adults, people at all ages of life relate to this man, because there's, in a way, so many different points of entries. Everybody has lost somebody. Everybody has felt the fear of really trying to understand the point of your life and your legacy. Or if you're a kid, you relate to the fact that kids are on stage creating things that you too could make yourself. And so I think these different points of access create an in into the story of Harold and magic.
I'm speaking to Paola Prestini, who's composer and co-creator of Aging Magician, which is opening at the New Victory Theater at 209 West 42nd Street. How long is the production?
It's about 65 minutes.
Uh-huh. And how long is it projected to run?
2 weeks.
And then are you moving on, or is this it?
Hopefully there will be a life. There is actually, so what we did is we actually did release a book, which is Harold's Book of Secrets, and that it has a CD in it, and that's actually, can be found on the National Sawdust website. So it is hopefully going to live on in many different in different ways.
I'm glad you brought up National Sawdust. You're the creative and executive director of that group. How would you describe it?
National Sawdust is a real dream for me. It began 7 years ago with the founder, Kevin Dolan, who had a dream to create a space for young artists in New York City. And he came to me as a composer and wanted the space to be artist-led. I had spent my 20s in New York City, having graduated from Juilliard, really suffering that bridge of, you know, basically going from emerging into professional life. And so even if I hadn't imagined in my 30s trying to create a space, I had always dreamt of starting a school. When I was at Juilliard, I got a Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowship, and it changed my life, because all of a sudden I was in a room of people who were thinking outside of just themselves. And so I began to think of how could you have your own career in context of others. So National Sawdust is really about young artists and creating an incubator and a space for young artists to emerge.
When you entered Juilliard, I imagine you just thought you'd make a living as a musician composer.
That pretty much changed after the first year. I was immediately worried about my future. I knew that as a woman composer and just in general with the field changing as quickly as it was, I was concerned right away of what it meant to have a career in the 21st century. And I knew that it was more than just talent that would take, it would take more than just talent to have a functioning career.
And National Sawdust is based in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Indeed.
So you lucked out to some degree, because you got there just as everything was exploding.
I think actually everything was already exploding by the time we got there. Kevin's very intelligent dream was to actually have a space that was about discovery and music that you haven't heard of in a place that is, you know, has a lot of people walking by, and in a place that's very vibrant. So that was part of the plan, which was to really kind of bring this very avant-garde space, which is an incubator for discovery, into a kind of buzzy neighborhood, if you will.
What can you tell us about the Bridging the Gap series that you've curated, that's curated by National Sawdust?
Absolutely. Well, it's curated by a wonderful composer named Robert Sirota, who actually used to be the president of Manhattan School of Music, and is an extraordinary composer in his own right. And he had really wanted to develop a series that was about mentorship. And of course, mentorship is very much at the soul of National Sawdust. And so he asked me to curate one concert, which is on March 5th. And that concert is with two of my mentors, which are also on the board of National Sawdust, John Zorn and Philip Glass. They changed my life as a young composer, and in many ways I modeled a lot of the decisions, to create National Sawdust around a lot of the decisions that I had seen them make in their lives. And so that concert is with both of their works, my own work, performed by Jeffrey Ziegler, who was the former cellist of the Kronos Quartet and who is my husband.
Ah. But when I think about Philip Glass and John Zorn, their music doesn't have all that much in common. How have they mentored you?
Well,
what has their influence been?
Absolutely. It's a great question. I mean, John Zorn gave me my first recording contract when I left Juilliard. And at the time I was, I knew that I wasn't going to follow a very normal trajectory, if you will, as a composer, and who better to, to relate to and to talk to and to dream with than John Zorn. I quickly became a curator at the Stone, and we became dear, deep friends, and he really helped me in the moments of darkness where I didn't understand how I could have a career that included curating, that included giving back. And so that was a very definite, clear path that I went on, and that was very much inspired by John.
Well, he comes out of jazz to some degree, whereas Philip Glass very much
went to
comes
Juilliard.
Out of, he comes out of classical music.
Philip, Philip is an extraordinary example of a 21st century composer in that he is he's not defined by style or discipline, or he doesn't think about, whether he's writing for film or for, for orchestra, or he's just prolific, and he thinks about his staff in a beautiful, deep way, and he's just a very generous soul, and he probably gave me some of the best advice I'd ever gotten as a young composer, and so those two are very important figures in my life.
A listener asks if you could talk about the cello score in the 2001 indie film Neo Noir.
Wow, that's a great question. That was a score.
You didn't know that people were listening are that sophisticated.
That's very nice. I do film scores. That was a score by a brilliant filmmaker named Chase Palmer, and it was a double string quartet, and he actually scored his film to my music. So that was a really exciting, different collaboration, but I've loved working with film and have intermittently done it.
But that's the backward way. Usually the composer is asked to come in and come up with music for a film. He came up with images to go with your music.
Definitely the different way. And actually, in a funny way, with Aging Magician, because Rindy was kind of, really tackling with the words at one point, I actually wrote the music and he wrote the words into the score. So it does happen sometimes that you twist process.
Isn't it scary to be a young composer in today's music world?
Yes, it is scary. It's a changing time for the arts. And I think that in many ways, when things are this scary, they are also open to redefinition. And in that way, it's very empowering.
Will you be affected by President Trump's plan to eliminate the National Endowment for the Arts and other federal funding programs for the arts?
Everyone will be affected. Yeah, Aging Magician was funded through the NEA. It's a very important part of our ecosystem, and in the fragile state of the arts, anything being taken away, and especially something that matters so much in terms of its ethos and of course its direct funding is very, very important.
Arts funding represents such a small part of the federal budget. Do you wonder what they hope to achieve by making these cuts?
That's yes. Of course, I do wonder about it.
I think it's 1/10 of a percent. It's in the millions, not in the billions.
No, and I can't honestly even try to attempt to understand these things because they feel so just ununderstandable to me. So I try to focus on what can we do as an arts institution to bring people together to realize the value of the arts and also for artists themselves to realize the impact they can have and how much they need to be thinking outside of the box and outside of themselves. So we really need to band together right now and to help culture and society understand the value of the arts.
Sounds to me like people will be doing a lot more fundraising in the near future than they have had to do in the past.
You know, fundraising is a very it's a very sincere part of our world. I don't see anything strange about it. I think that it's if you think about composers in the past, they always had to have, you know, always actually cultivated and wanted to have patrons who experienced their work and who believed in their work. So I see fundraising as a very necessary part of our everyday life. And yes, it will continue to be an important part of our
I mentioned that the Hubble Cantata premiered last summer in Celebrate Brooklyn. So were you working on it at the same time you were working on Aging Magician?
Yes, I actually typically have a couple of works going on at the same time. You never know when a work will finally take off or when someone will pick it up. And the Hubble was a work that I'd been working on with the astrophysicist and brilliant writer Mario Livio and Royce Vavreck, the librettist, for many, many years.
So you like collaborating no matter what?
I love collaborating. It's a window into a new world. It's the way that for me, it's like a school beyond school. I keep learning this way. And actually, it's going to the Kennedy Center in May.
Ah, fabulous. So you'll be, and then we hope that Aging Magician will continue being performed. So you'll be juggling a number of balls in the air.
These
are
my children. They will hopefully keep growing.
Paola Prestini, who is a composer and creator, a co-creator of The Aging Magician, now at the New Victory Theater at 209 West 42nd Street. Also, the creative and executive director of National Sawdust. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.